The views and opinions expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WPRK,
Okay, welcome back to Punkonomics, and we're discussing many topics today. Dr. Benjamin Balica.
We're already talking about this stuff and other things, and you recruited me into all this happy but angry family, and I thank you for it when we met in the Gaza event. Take it away.
Thank you for having me back, Jesse and Professor Balak. I was here a couple of months ago, and I'm with Speak Up Florida, a independent chapter of the movement to end the new Jim Crow, which was sparked by a book written by Michelle Alexander. As I said the last time I was here, this chapter comes out of a study group conducted at the Riverside Church in Harlem. This is a great activist over there named Joseph Jazz Hayden, who was one of the main organizers of the Revolt of Attica. And so he put out a call to grassroots activists in New York City and to do a study group on this great book that Michelle Alexander has published, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in a Time of Color Blindness. And so we did that study group a little over 4 years ago at Riverside Church in Harlem. And out of the study group, we decided that we were going to send for Michelle Alexander and that we were going to take on what she is asking for in her book, a call to movement to organize the most marginalized of our community, people of color, for the most part, who are being mass incarcerated, put to the system of the prison industrial complex, the judicial industrial complex, and everybody making money in cash out of the most poor and vulnerable of our community. So we gathered together, we called Mitch Alexander, and we got together at Riverside Church. We've got a venue right there, seat about 1,000 people, and we kicked off the movement to end the new Jim Crow. In that state, it was called the campaign because it was just beginning, but now we're national. We've got chapters everywhere. You can find us at national chapter, our campaign to end the new Jim Crow, .org. And also the local chapter here, which is Speak Up Florida. Also speakupfl.org. And that's our local chapter here in Orlando, Florida.
Put on the blog on punkonomics.org all the contact info links, etc. If you're interested.
Yeah. So, I'm glad that you guys have me back and let's get it on.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's exactly okay. So there's a new chapter, and Miguel's bringing this stuff from New York down to Central Florida. We often think that there's nothing going on. That Central Florida is a little bit like a bastion of I don't know, it's not Disney, right? but it is, right? But still, somebody wrote a book back in the day, Under the Shadow of the Mouse, which is a wonderful title. But there's a lot going on, and so let's keep going by, you know, different kinds of things, and that's what we're going to talk about, and bring on.
Well, I'm Jay. I represent local union, SEIU, Service Employees International Union. We are national all over, and I met Miguel at one of the marches, and he turned me on to the new Jim Crow, and I've been studying it myself, and I'm an activist out there. I always has been over the last 27, 28 years, and we do a lot of stuff in the community, you know, so that's me.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Jay Griffiths. I am with the Orlando Light Brigade, and we try and support any activists out there to try and get your message put out. As far as, I don't know what else to say. I'm sorry.
We're squeezing into the studio a little bit, so yeah, I'm moving. Jesse's like jumping around, moving the microphones. No, I mean, I'll totally jump in a little bit because I went only to one of your things up on the bridge there. So I mean, I think maybe people drive around Central Florida, they see sometimes these signs, and I think it's an important thing that we'll come back to, I'm sure, this kind of solidarity between the different movements. Each one might have their specific angle, their specific issue they want to be addressing. And the Orlando Light Brigade, they have these like neon, what do you call them?
Well, they're
not neon actually.
3-foot by 4-foot letters lit up with LED lights.
Right.
And we do.
So they go on a bridge, like the bridge on the Katy Way over. I hope you're not getting into trouble by saying that.
Yes, we used to do Katy Way Trail until the police informed us that you're not supposed to be on Katy Way Trail After Dark.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
So that'd be a warning to anybody that's trying to go on Katy Way, because they have a no tolerance arrest policy. So keep that in mind when you're riding home from Raleigh College on the Katy Way Trail.
Exactly, right. I've been doing it. Well. But yeah, so you see, they're putting these lights about at different causes. So you had, I saw you doing, I mean, for the Ferguson, different, protests, downtown,
right.
So Black Lives Matter, you did, when I was there with you, breaking the law, apparently.
Right.
It was against the war, stop the wars. So they make, if you go around this and point and see these kind of lit signs in different places, $15 now minimum wage, you guys did a whole bunch of stuff, so that's them.
Yep.
And finally, we have another guest.
Good afternoon. My name is Garfield Green. I'm an active board member of Speak Up Florida. I'm here to just to support the group.
Yep. We'll meet for that. Yeah. So, all right. So we have all this, all these people here. So, what do you want to talk about?
Collaboration.
Well, there you go. Collaboration, yeah. Police brutality. Yeah. It's out there, you know. It's America. Again, we all know, if we look around the city of Orlando and other cities in the U.S., this mass corporation, you know, we got to stand up. We got to put a stop to it. You know, if you follow the money, you can find the cause. And I feel like, you know, you got a lot of homeless people out there that's been charged to live in homeless shelters, basically $10 and sometimes more. And then, you know, you get a person, you arrest a person for whatever. You know, you say he's, you know, selling drugs, using drugs, or have drug paranoia on him. Then you lock him up, you give him a sentence, he do his time, you know, he get out, he come out with fines, just like you do in college. You know, you get a student loan to go to college. You do 4 or 5 years, you do 4 years in college, then you go back and do another 4 years, get your master's. You come out, you know, you got fine. You got college dues you got to pay. You got loans you got to pay for. You got a lot of stuff you got to, you know, do when you come out. And you can't find a job. So how you expect for that kid in college to find, you know, a decent living when he come out of college with debt? Well, you know, incarceration is the same thing. You know, you get arrested, you go to jail, you come out with fines. Not loans, but fines. And then you turn around, you're homeless, because I feel, you know, once you get incarcerated, you know, if you become a felony, not all arrests turn into felonies, but most of them do. In the African-American community, I can talk about it, 99.9% of the time, it's going to be turned into a felony charge, unless you plea out. When you come out with that, you got that on your bike. You can't get public housing, you know. You can't get a decent education because of the felony charge. You can't get a good job. You can't get a decent job because of the felony charge. And then you also have probation fines. You got court costs. You got restitution, if that's involved in it, on your shoulder. What do? You go to the homeless shelter. Okay, that's the first place I can go when I come out of incarceration. I go to the homeless shelter. They close the door in my face and say, hey, you got to have $10 to come in here for the night. Okay, well, where am I supposed to get $10 from? I can't pawn anything because I don't own anything. When I got arrested, they took everything away from me. They stripped me down. They took all of my rights away from me. It's just like back in the 1850s in slavery. You had no rights. Well, this is a new form of slavery. It's a new form of the Jim Crow. You have no rights once you get into the system. The system, I feel, is bad. You know, you getting to the point now where we went from arresting on this so-called drug war that started out pretty much from my research, Nixon, all the way up to Obama. Clinton was involved, Reagan was involved, Bush was involved, I mean the whole nine yards. And it went from slavery to new form of slavery, that I would call it. In America, we don't want to talk about racism. But when you look at the system, you can't help but see racism. Most of the law enforcement that do all of their drug activity normally be in the poor black neighborhoods. You don't see them out in the suburbs doing this kind of thing, smashing in doors, breaking out windows, doing home invasions, that I would call it. You see them in the low poverty areas of any city. So who live there? People of color. People of color live there. So my thing is, don't get me wrong, I'm not a guy that promote drug activity. But at the same time, if you're going to do it across the board. Do it right. You got to go to the root of the problem. People in poorer neighborhoods who don't even have a job, who just got out of jail with a book bag on his bike that say, you owe me. Society saying, you owe me. But I have anything to give, have nothing to give. How can I get money to go get drugs to put in my community? So let's follow the money trail. That come from the system, because I don't know right off the top of my head nobody that can't even make minimum wage. They can go to afford a plane. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody that can't make minimum wage that can afford a boat. So let's not play the system for what it is. Let's look beyond that. They use this cover war on drugs to hide a lot of other things. And then you also empower law enforcement. It went from arresting to now right out killing. They lynched back in the 1850s. Well, now, later, we're not lynching, but we are killing at the hand of a gun instead of a end of a rope. And you're wearing a badge behind it. And you expect for the people to respect law enforcement and the government agency. So that's basically why I'm here today. So we all can come together. Those that can hear my voice can actually join the crusade and say, hey, look around you and speak up for yourselves.
Those are strong words. Go ahead, man.
Okay, I just want to say this right here. As you say, category. I can just go to the store. I don't know about half. You can go to the store. They won't bother you. Mm. But they can go to. I can go to the store. You want this? You know, like I'm just, you know, getting groceries. Anything like that. They put a label on you.
Yep.
And then, you know, just like I said the other day, walking down the street, they ask you for your ID. Why are you asking me for my ID in my neighborhood?
Because
right.
But then again, since, you know, trouble is easy to get in and hard to get out. And, you know, as I was young, you know, I thought that was something funny to get in trouble, but now it comes back to haunt me. As you say, I got a felony. You know, like I ain't never killed anybody, but that came back to haunt me. You know, like I can't get a job, a good, decent job, because they're going to do a research on me. There go back history, 1984. Wow. Do you know how long ago that been? How long ago that been? And here it is, we're living in 2015.
And they're still holding that.
And what I did in 1984, it called back like, I forgot what I did. Wow. And you know, but they can remember well,
and
mister.
And you pay for it.
Yeah, and you know, like that's, you know, I paid my debt to society. I was young. But now, you know, they still come back to haunt me. You know, like, golly, that was over and done with.
It's a huge double standard, of course.
Yeah, it's
kind of like the absence of double jeopardy.
Yeah.
You know, you get caught once, they try you and they try you again. And again.
Right. And then, but they say, we're here to help you. And then again, that's not you doing anything but discouraging me.
I mean, there might be individuals within the system probably that there are decent people, but the system itself, like you were saying, I mean, is completely skewed. It has double standards. You, there's no even semblance of equal opportunity. I mean, I gotta say that, you know, you give a wonderful, you know, you summarized everything. I know I'm gonna follow that with a dry, boring lecture, but I mean, you know, the numbers, the statistics, the decades of econometric studies all support what you were saying in the sense of, you know, the lack of opportunity, the racial profiling in the job market. I mean, we know that. And in this day and age now, with the public discourse is kind of reverting back to ugly old days in many ways, it really drives me nuts because it's not about how you feel. I mean, it's facts.
It's just like another quote. They can never remember all the good things that I can do. I mean, did, but they can remember all the bad things. Like my God, you know, 1984, 1990. I went to the doctor to get a prescription. And I had to show my ID and everything like that. Then I looked behind the counter. They got a picture of me actually when I was in jail. You know, the you know, like how O.J. Simpson with the mugshot. Wow. You know, like that brought back memories. Like, dog, they brought that picture up. I forgot all about that picture, but you know, like, you know, they get the worst picture that it is, and you know, I was at the worst time, okay, DUI.
Yeah, all information is collected, and yeah. You know, I mean, black people, obviously, with a specific history of, you know, African slavery in America, and then its continuation, poor people in general, you know, I mean, you can be a rich black man, all dressed in expensive suits, you come to go to the store, they will also look at you sideways. We've heard stories about that, too. It possibly, you know, I'll admit, I'll bring myself into the picture. My kids will laugh. You know, sometimes I really look a little bit kind of, you know, what's the polite way? Disheveled, you know? Okay. I go out, get my kid and my t-shirt torn up, you know, some kind of pajama pants and stuff like that. So I get funny looks like that. So I'm white, yeah, but, you know. But people profile all the time. And, of course, blacks are most profiled. But we live, people talk about the surveillance society, the NSA following everything, all our information on Facebook and stuff. I mean, I want to say that to go back to the solidarity thing, that in no way reducing the drama, the tragedy, the injustice of people of color and poor people, obviously, everybody's getting in on it. In some sense, you know, it's time that people in the middle class will also kind of perk their ears up and realize that, you know, it's no longer a luxury to support the cause. They're coming for you too, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So that your kids in college, yeah. You know, they're posting pictures of themselves partying in their frat houses. And when they get, liver disease, when they're 50, they'll be denied health insurance because we see you like to drink, didn't you? Yeah.
Well, it all's coming back around, you know. I mean, the way I look at it, you know, our biggest problem is that we don't want to recognize it, you know, and that's what's wrong with America today. No one want to talk about it. No one want to sit down and discuss it and then try to come up with a solution to fix it. That's our biggest problem. We try to keep it hidden. Nobody want to be embarrassed about it. You know, it's still going on from, you know, the 1850s to 2015. Only way we're going to stop it is to let it out the bag. And get into discussion on it and figure out a way how we can fix it. There's no way a man should go to prison, do his time, serve his time, and then come out and his whole life is destroyed. Don't get a chance to restart over. I mean, to me, that's racism. Because when you see the numbers, that targeted a certain group of people.
Mm. And drug use is actually completely equal, if anything, lower in the black community than
it's actually
white.
Lower, you know, because we see it all the time. Mm-hmm. And we know what it do to you. But yet they try to portray it, you know, and some, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not against policing. I think that's a good thing. I'm against the bad policing. I'm against the ones that go overboard with the policing. And I'm also against the people who police the policing. You got state attorney office who clearly see a clear cut case where a policeman have actually killed an individual in the middle of the street, you know, for whatever reason it may be, and you don't take no action. You don't even give him off without pay. You give him off with pay. You know, like you're rewarding the bad doing.
What, $1 million in donation? Like,
yes.
You know, I
mean, how can you raise that? I can't raise $1 million to pay my rent or to make my life successful, to pay my way through college. You got college kids can't raise $1 million. You know,
and it's clearly an aberration. You know, people will start getting into the legalities of it. Yeah, but with this, with that. No, let's just stop right here. You know, even the Bar Association, I mean, lawyers, I mean, not community activists. It's an aberration. I mean, maybe he would go to court and he would maybe not be convicted of murder. They might, probably should, but let's say that he wouldn't. Like Zimmerman, but still, you know.
Let's not get on that topic. Right?
Please, right? I mean, but look at how, I mean, you know, and mostly white people are in denial, right? I think there's an element of it's really a difficult pill to swallow. You know, I mean, you've been told all your life that you're. Look at France. My wife might come in later and she'll open up on France a little bit for us, and she's French, so she's ideal for that. But you know, it's so. And it's similar, the similarities of the problem across the world, and that's what I think is again for Miguel's call for solidarity. It's hard to swallow the pill that, you know, us white Westerners, whatever, right? We're so wonderful, we're free, we're tolerant, we're rich, we're educated, but on whose back did that happen? I mean, and oh dear, here I go, right? I mean, this is considered to be a radical position, but I'm sorry. Look at the numbers. You know, all that free labor, there wouldn't have been an industrialization in Western Europe and in America without African slave labor in America. Why? Because the price of cotton was brought down through torture, murder, mayhem. And so the price went down by 75% since 1820 to 18, and the Civil War. That exploded the industry throughout. So it's not just the slave owners in the South. It's right. The North. The financial system of Europe was built on that blood money. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are we going to do about it? Well, are we going to deny it? Would seem to be the option that most people
take
very tragically and disgustingly take, or realize that that's it and let's just stop doing it now. Yeah. You know, because this is going on in the world today, still it continues.
I want to blame the poor. It's like how is the poor going to buy a politician? How's a poor person going to sway an election? And how's a poor person going to buy a politician the right to legislation that they want to benefit them? How's a poor person going to manage all these things? But they're the problem. I don't get that logic at all.
It works. You know, it's somewhat of a brainwashing. It's not new, perhaps. Yeah. It's sometimes disappointing to we thought we were getting a little bit better. We were going from awful to a little bit less awful, and all of a sudden you realize that no, we're not.
And down the line I forgot your name. I got a senior moment.
Well, you're
52.
It's grandpa. Call him grandpa.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, down that line, you know, how do we buy a politician? Of course, you know, we know that all three branches of government are bought, you know, unfortunately, statewide and federal-wide. Mm-hmm. You know, and it doing that line, you know, it reminds me of this legislator here. I believe he was a senator, Trey Randall, a legislative Republican from Florida. We have another one, also Republican, from the state of New York, who did the same thing. The one in New York, I forget his name, 2 years ago, he was against the medical marijuana bill in New York because of all the, you know, morality behind it. But then it just happened that he gets caught in a highway with blasting weed in a highway. So he got busted and so on. So we have the same situation here a year and a half ago or so with this legislator, Trey Randall, you know, which, you know, is part of that, you know, those
tough on drugs.
Yeah. Tough on drug. You know, he suggested, along with other legislator, that people on food stamps should be drug tested.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, and he advocated for that very strongly because it was immoral for anybody to take drugs, you know, that you get even food stamps. You know, poor people, always poor people under attack, you know. Well, guess what? He get busted for cocaine, you know. And so we see the double standard here, you know, and we don't see the Republicans going, you know, and reprimanded him, you know, we see of kind, you know, silence going on, you know, and so on. So it is clear that we have two Americas, you know, we got one those who are represented by the corporate, you know, or represent the corporations, you know, and those who have no voice in power in our legislative bodies, you know. And
political system shouldn't even be for sale. I mean, there's always corruption. The thing that's insane in America these days is that we've legalized it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We legalize it, but we wouldn't legalize on the other end.
Yeah.
We want to down the poor. Mm-hmm.
In most countries in the world, you have to, when you're going to buy a politician, you have to go at night with a suitcase full of money in America.
These individuals, you don't see them being paraded in through the jails, the county jails, you know. You know, the class system here is very clear.
Yeah, right. I mean, how can you with a straight face? Okay, let's be cool. Let's accept. So maybe I can see somebody who's really like socially conservative saying like, I don't want a penny of my money, of my tax money going towards anybody who smokes weed and then needs some kind of assistance perhaps.
Yeah.
And who just got $6 trillion by conservative measures of your money? A bunch of banksters.
You're right.
Doing cocaine, orgies of prostitutes, abroad for the underaged ones, you know, just took away all our money and we gave it to them and said thank you. Or some people did, bailouts, but then very few on the Democrat, on the Republican side were opposed to it because they knew that that would mark them to the real masters.
And Benny, that narrative is naughty. Very important, because that narrative is absent from Main Street media. People don't know about this. So they when people hear about, including my own family, about people on drugs, well, that's a horrible thing, and government teaches us that it should be punished, you know? But the narrative of this legislator, these banksters, these stories are not, are not frequent in mainstream media. So it's not that we are less moral, for lack of a better term, and that we do more drugs than the upper social class. It's just that, as a matter of fact, they have more money. It's just that that narrative is not out there where, our common people and mainstream media play a responsibility there in that. That's why medias like this are so important. That's why I'm going back also, to net neutrality, that we make sure that we have access. Grassroots activists.
They're plugging everything. They're plugging the holes.
Once they unplug us, they're not going to hear the stories that you're mentioning here about those masters, and which also brings up, and I don't want to drift away from the main, but I also want to bring this, which we got to be aware. Why does big corporate nonprofit industrial complex like the NAACP and LULAC want to do away with net neutrality, and are taking all this money from the cable companies, to advocate to end new neutrality? Of course, because they know LULAC and the NAACP know that there
What LULAC?
LULAC is the equivalent for the Latino community, advocates for Latino rights and so on. And they're right there. They've been around for a long time, and a bunch of individuals, that don't connect with the community anymore, like the NAACP. At one time, they were relevant.
Right.
But like many others, have become irrelevant because they've been absorbed with the system. They're there with the system.
A lot of well-meaning philanthropical kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, I know in the environmentalist movement, a lot of movements that were initially quite good have become now the kind of people that come to the logging company destroying entire communities, assassinating Native Americans, what have you. Yeah. And they will ask them politely to maybe do a little bit less.
Yeah.
And that's what too many times that, and they expelled from their ranks the people who want to be a little bit more assertive. So it's one of the nastiest recent development in the past, I guess, 10 or 20 years that organization that definitely started off positively have been somewhat co-opted gently. But it's a slow drift, right? I mean, there's no, I wish there was some kind of, we joke, right? Illuminati, right?
Right.
I wish that they were really controlling the world. At least we'd know
who to go at.
Yes, thank you. I was going to say who to shoot, but that would be inappropriate.
Who to
arrest? I don't know. Indeed, no, it's this kind of drift. It's a systemic failure. It's like a lot of good people in it, but I got news for you. I mean, I've studied the Holocaust extensively. That's kind of my background, and you'd be amazed how many of these Germans with their leather clothing were really well-meaning.
Yeah.
One of the scariest things in the world, when they finally decided to empty the ghettos and to exterminate the Jews in mass, not because it was late, by the way. People don't know. I mean, it's like 41, too, they only began the extermination. Before, it was just ghetto, work camp, stuff like that. One of their arguments was humanitarian. It's like, look at them. You have hundreds of thousands of people stuck in these ghettos, dying of disease, hunger, starvation. Let's put them out of their miseries. So even the gassing of the Jews was caged in language that was kind of humanitarian. So you can really twist things around in real ugly ways.
Well, that's kind of what they're doing here in America with the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of them actually doing that, they're doing it by cross-racing, locking you up.
Yep.
Different version.
It's just a different version of it. Just rewritten.
So the modern day version.
But there's no more even correctional on the medical treatment in jails and stuff. We've kind of abandoned the notion of let's have retraining so that you get a chance when you get out at least, or something like that.
They kind of threw that out there too with the retraining, or rehabilitation they would call it, in jail. But we all know that every job that pretty much represent America look at felonies.
Right.
We all know this about every system we have, housing, and like my man said about the if you don't get any kind of government assistance, they want you to take a piss test, in order for you to get that, you got to pass it.
Right.
Now, my thing is this, you know, we can spend billions of dollars to go to the moon, trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, we can bike up some of the default that we had in the economy, bailout they call it.
Yeah.
But we can't do anything about our homeless. Mm-hmm. Or our well-being.
When mass we corporate welfare. We're giving away taxpayers' money to companies, you know, that are making mass profits, doing great. We're just, here, have some
and
more.
I'm not going to touch the part about cheap labor from the inmates.
Mm-hmm.
See, I haven't got on, we haven't even got on that yet.
Yes.
Where you got... You got corporations.
But not to cut you off anything like that, just speaking about homelessness. Okay, just simple, I'm going to jail for something that I didn't, not a criminal thing. Now, just got a job and I just lost it.
Wow.
Oh, God, now I got to start all over again. And now that's just giving me discouraged again. I just got, you know, mind you said, been about 2 or 3 years since I had a job.
Right.
But I finally got me a good paying job. By the way, sir, please don't take me to jail. You know, like I just got this job. You know, like just throw this up. But I'm not a criminal. I didn't kill anybody.
Yep, right.
Everybody that's in jail is not a criminal. I'm supposed to say it like that.
We know a big majority of nonviolence.
Right. Well, what are you here for? Like, what? You got to be kidding.
Right, right.
You got to be kidding. And then, you know, I thought my problem was bad, but you know, like, golly, I just got this job. Now I'm crying. Well, what you crying for? I just lost my job.
Yeah, you know, after the financial crisis in 2008, if we just gave a drug test to all the bankers before we gave them our bailout,
right,
we would have a massive surplus right now.
Yeah. Well, let's throw in the politicians on the drug test too, because they're the ones actually doing most of it. You know,
exactly.
The bankers are just financing it for them.
There you go.
You know, and the biggest problem, which is I always argue about, is that we still allow these people to stay in office for decades.
Right.
You know, it's not just the young, you know, representatives of congressmen that are doing the drugs. We're talking about the old people that have been there who've been propagating the problem.
Clinton? Well, we got to get out of the old tactic that we use for is keeping people in office. Mm-hmm. I think it's time for America, this new generation, to step up.
Mm-hmm.
They once called it the lost generation. Well, now it's time for that lost generation to be found. You know, because we go by on names. You know, you was a certain name, you know, we stand behind you. You was a Republican or a Democrat. That's the way I was raised, as a Democrat. I'm going to vote Democrat regardless of what kind of person that person is. And we're going to have to get around that. We're going to have to go and start putting people in office that can represent us.
Right.
The people. You notice that when people of color start running for office, they start putting all types of stipulation. It's kind of like the military back in World War One and World War Two. You know, when they didn't have enough military men to go fight the war, they would draft you.
Mm.
You know, well, when a lot of soldiers, black soldiers, brown soldiers, would make it through the war, come out the jungles, and come back to society, and they say, okay, I done did my time. I want to draw a check.
Mm.
Well, they say, okay, we got too many soldiers in the military, so now what we got to do, we got to stop deaths from happening. But when I was coming up, they would say, hey, two things you do. Get a job, go to the military to get you off the street. Well, the military saw that. They figured that out. What they did, they started putting a stipulation on getting into the military. You got to be a certain height. You got to be a certain weight. Can't have flat feet. You got to have a high school diploma. You got to, you know, do this and do that. Well, 2015, we're still facing that. Every time we cross one hurdle, the system creates another.
Mm.
Somebody get in office with this bright idea of how to keep the poor poor and the rich rich, and they come up with a hurdle. And they sell it to the society, you know, by putting things like the war on drugs. They know a lot of mothers and a lot of fathers out there that consider themselves as middle class would bite on that. And they show you guns. They show you drugs on the table. You take 200 guns out of the ghetto. You got about 500 to 600 in the suburbs, one neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
But it looked good sitting on the table like they're doing their job. You know, but what people got to wake up on and realize that it ain't the guns that they're taking that we're concerned about. It's the laws they're making with the person who's holding the gun, like the gentleman.
Mm.
You know, my thing is taking guns off the table is not helping society. Taking drugs out of the ghetto is not helping society. What will help society is to give that man who don't have a job, who have no reason to go get a gun if he had a job, because he'd be going to work every day or every night. You know, he wouldn't have time to go out and sell drugs if he had to go to work in the morning or at night.
Yeah, and it's often not an individual choice. I mean, that's another part of the myth, right? Yeah, that, you chose, I've decided instead of being a lawyer, I'm going to join a drug gang. I mean, it doesn't work like that.
Show them the money, the fancy cars, what do you expect the kids to do? They're like, oh, I want that. And
we do. Right. We do have a culture that focuses so much on that. And, you know, if you're not in a specific class, you don't have access to the banker's circle. So what is other way can you excel, you know?
Dan said, now I remember your name. Look at that. All right. So, 52 and a grandpa. Yeah. So, going to that, you know, the cars, the fashion and the games and the videos and the iPhones and everything. So, you know, who's in charge of promoting that? You know, if it's not the media that's controlled by those same representative that we were talking about that could get away, you know, that could vote, you know, in a legislative body to oppress those who are in food stamps, you know, to deprive them of the most basic need of food, you know, when they're doing coke themselves, you know. So we see this over again. And who are behind them but corporation? And who are the corporations but not the mainstream
but
media?
It's hidden for kind of the majority of the public. Maybe like the thing, I mean, the power game, right, where the top of the pyramid, the proverbial, like we say today, since I walk by the 1%, want to keep the 99 down. But, you know, back in Middle Ages, the peasants knew that they were the ones doing the work, you know.
Right.
And even, in fact, the master there would be responsible to some extent for their well-being. But now we're kind of in denial. We have all these people who are not doing well at all. And we're talking about a recovery where there's no recovery for anybody but the top 10%, roughly, that have been doing any better. Everybody else is flat or less. All of that stuff, it's crazy how this propaganda had led to the fact that people don't realize the injustices. They actually believe they have an opportunity where, in fact, again, the numbers speak to it. And I have arguments with people of, you know, all the time. I mean, they're all like, no, but there's opportunity if you work hard. No, it's not there. It's not in the numbers.
Right.
That's a myth.
Yeah.
That's a myth.
I'm using this as an example, as you were saying, getting back to the military. Young, just getting out of high school, wants to leave home. Signed up for the military, and the recruiter said you're 5 pounds under, 130 pounds. That crushed me. So that devastated me. To this day, well, I probably gained 10 pounds, but 130, you had to be 135 pounds to join the military. So the recruiter was trying to get me in so bad, you know, he said, eat some bananas, I was so frustrated, I just gave up.
Right.
But you know, like you said, 135 pounds.
Yeah. And talking about that, you know, we see in our community of how we see a way out, you know, of poverty. And a lot of people see, maybe the military, you know, and a lot of people become part of that military industrial complex, you know, because we see
as a
body of getting away away from poverty.
Right.
It's unfortunate, you know. Why do we have to seek the military industrial complex as a way out of the struggle of our ghettos? You know, it's unfortunate. Now, you know, and we see that there is always money from $40,000 to $55,000 per individual to incarcerate one individual. Mm-hmm. In mind that 70% of the 2.4 million incarcerated in the United States, approximately 70% are there for nonviolent crime, you know, mostly for drug possession, not sales, you know, and then you ask those a little bit who did tax evasion and whatever, you know, nonviolent crimes. And we always have, depending where they're incarcerated, at $40,000 to $55,000 per year available, always state and federal money to incarcerate individuals. Why can't this money be redirected to create jobs, housing, prevention, educational in our community? Redirect that money that's always there.
Well, it doesn't work for them, and I came prepared with some numbers.
You need democracy. For that, you need democracy. You need to have people making decisions that actually are seriously considering the good of the nation in general.
Right.
But that's not, sadly, not the case. I mean, you have to have accountability. I mean, you know, I mean, we don't have democracy. I mean, sure, we can speak our mouth off. Here we are, right? But if, with, you know, what do they care, right?
But here's the numbers for you. Accountability. And this is what I'm, back to what I was saying, that we got people in Congress and House representatives who have been there forever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why is it that Mr. Daryl Issa, Republican of California, his wealth is $448 million. Now, his background is security. Now, mm-hmm. security involves a lot of things, like right. the prison complex. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have Mark Warner, Democrat from Virginia, $254 million worth. Okay. Now, there's a whole bunch of other Republicans. I'm not going to get into all of them.
And Democrats.
Let's be honest. Republicans are a little bit more rotten than Democrats.
Right. But let's go back to the numbers here on the report. Okay. Yeah. Now, those are, for example, you know, the richest, right?
Right.
Now, the poorest, one of them is David Valadao, also from California, Republican. He's minus $11 million. Okay, you have Alcee L. Hastings, Democrat of Florida. We got one of them in there, right? He's minus $4.7 million. Now,
what do you mean by minus $4.7 million?
To justify David's minus million, right? This is because he happens to be the poorest lawmaker, because he actually took out loans to help his farm. Okay, now, we all know that they get farm subsidies.
Yeah, exactly.
So why is it that we're giving these people work when they already have money? They're not contributing to society. All they're doing is tweaking all the laws.
But you know, if you can contribute money, then people with power and interests will purchase their politicians through the lobbying system and many other mechanisms
right.
to do their bidding. It's impossible. It's ridiculous to me to, and I think both parties and liberals fall into that, and certainly conservatives, this notion that somehow all we need is good masters. That somehow if we just have well-meaning, rich, powerful people in charge of us, then we'll be okay.
Well, you also have to remember we've
even been if you have a well-meaning, decent master, then the son is a psychopath. I mean, the whole point of the democracy is that we do not have kings that rule us.
But you know that's been indoctrination for decades, you know, and years. The problem is we're still living in the trickle-down economics of the Reagan era.
We are.
Plain and simple, and nobody wants to admit to it. I mean, the fact that we have nonprofit organizations claiming that they're doing internships to help these people, and then you know they're not getting their jobs, they're just getting free labor, that's completely, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing to me, but you have your typical computer person sitting behind a computer, candy coding things, or just absorbing just basic pieces of information that makes them feel okay and not upset. We live in a society which, you know, you basically
and if
take
not,
your
you
pain.
Get prescription drugs, right?
Right. Let's talk about people that completely on legalized drugs.
Yeah, right.
You know,
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh. Right, right.
What a lot of
people don't understand is that these are the very same people that go out and vote.
Yeah. Right.
You know, they're always there.
Yeah.
They don't care about the issues, but they want to make sure their team wins, regardless
of
the ones.
But you know, people under communist dictatorship back in the 70s, 60s, and the worst times of that, they were voting too. I just like to remind Americans that, you know, in Soviet Russia, East Germany, they voted actually a lot. They voted like 98%. It was highly encouraged.
But the information is not like it is
now,
though.
So you say, but they only had one party to vote for.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, what do we have, right? And I'd like to repeat that. I like to repeat it ad nauseum if necessary, right? The differences in terms of the real substantial policy differences between the reformist faction of like the Soviet Communist Party and the old guard of the Soviet the Communist Party back in the 70s were significantly bigger than the difference between Republicans and Democrats in America today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's what this book is all about, right?
So, what democracy? Yeah. It's a circus. Mm-hmm. People then say, oh, but you need to vote. I mean, I don't want to... I do actually on occasion come out and say don't.
No, you do.
The problem is, I do, yeah. The problem is, realize that voting is kind of useless. Mm-hmm. Maybe locally it's different, you know. Yeah. Let's make that caveat. Yeah. Nationally, presidentials, don't even bother.
Yeah,
but you have to do other things like you guys.
Yeah.
You know, you're exactly the example. So maybe don't vote.
Yeah.
Or when voting certainly is not enough, You also have to push the politicians to create a giant movement to counterbalance the millions that are given to them, and that they do what they're told. I mean, they barely even change, right? You know, they cut and paste out of the document they get from Alec into their legislation. They've been busted on it a couple of times by the handful of non-corrupt people in the Congress and the Senate, right? You can see the same typos.
But, okay, getting back to what you were just saying about voting, that's easier said than done. If you have a felony, I lost my right to vote.
Of course.
Do you know how long it had to take for me to get my rights back? And then, you know, I'm doing this petition, you know, like, it was so many young black people I ran into, like, I could sign it, but I can't vote.
And even those who can, a tremendous amount of people, and most explicitly people of color, were frauded out of the election in 2000, in 2004, 2008 even too. Thing is, Obama won by so much that despite the fact that he stole about 3 million votes, he still won. But you know what really makes me cry? But he did win. And he didn't do anything. That's the real tragedy in a sense, you know? I mean, he said all the right words. Americans are not, after all, that nasty, you know? They voted for him, but then he didn't do it. And maybe he couldn't do it. This is not a personal attack against him. I mean, maybe he's not the one making decisions in a sense. Maybe if they were like a million Americans in the street yelling, Obama, do what you promised, then maybe he would have been able to do it. All that to say that actually this grassroots activism that you guys are here to talk about.
And exactly that. They say it's more, it's still on YouTube. There's a little video of when he was debating Romney. And if one could consider a slip of the tongue, but he is in the middle of the debate and it's still on YouTube. He says, well, Washington cannot be changed from the inside. It has to be from the outside in. And that was made a big deal. So why are you so advocated for change and hope if it can't be changed from Washington? So in a slip of the tongue right there, he's admitting that the system does not work. So, you know, so that's why, organizations like the one of, Brother Jay and Dan here, the Orlando Light Brigade, all the grassroots organizations, you know, because we get the message that it can't be changed from the inside. So it's going to have to be grassroots movement, like back in the days of Frederick Douglass and, you know, that did away with abolition, you know, Sojourn Truth, Harriet Tubman. You know, we have to create, with my simplistic mind, a underground railroad where individuals that are from the most oppressed community, the slave of our era, come together, you know, whether it's working class or those who are just flat out of work and can't got to check the box forever. In Florida, 1.5 million, including myself, can't get a job here because all the time we check that box, and if we don't, okay, they will run that background check anyway. And if you're working there with Home Depot or anybody and you got 15 days already in, we know these cases, they will call you to the office. We got to let you go because they ran the background check anyway. So you're out of a job, you know. So you're back to the hood, you know. So it is us who have to come together, you know, and build this underground railroad. So the way the Harriet Tubman did it to get out the modern slavery. And that's why we're collaborating together and try to do this, like Obama said, from the outside in.
Well, even if you check that box and you tell them that you had a misdemeanor or whatever, you're not going to get that job.
No. Regardless. You're not going to get a job. And that's what I'm saying. You get all these politicians that run like Scott that say, you know, we want to put America back to work. Well, American is someone who just got out of jail. Put him back to work. America is somebody who's homeless. Put him back to work. If you really mean that, then you will clean up your streets. Not by force. Beating them across there with billy clubs, stun guns, shooting them, you know, arresting them. But simply putting them back to work.
There's plenty of work to be done.
Plenty of work. Instead of using the trade market where we send all our, you know, corporations overseas, bring it back. You know, bring it back. We once had that. And we was in a better place. You know, we talk, but we show no action. And now, and I'm going back to what Miguel said, the brother said, about Obama, say, work it from the outside and not the inside. Well, he got a rule awakening when he got in the White House.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people look at the White House as being something totally different than what he thought it was. once he got there, he realized it was more resistant there than it was out on the street. You know, so I'm not against voting because a lot of my ancestors have died to get that right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm always going to be for voting.
Yeah.
What I am for, along with voting, is education.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know who you voting for, mm-hmm, and what you want out of that person.
Yeah.
I think we lost that, yeah, along the way, yeah, as people.
Yeah. And a lot of people also, and most Americans, look at government as, and I know, you know, they think what democracy, you know, we, right, vote and all that kind of stuff, but there's a mentality that we have King Obama, or we, right, have King Reagan.
Right.
Well, he cannot do or change the laws arbitrarily like that because, yeah, he would be a dictator.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I keep saying. It's like, we have to get rid of these people in Congress. We have to have term limits.
Well, it's not that's just getting rid of the people of Congress. It's, I mean, obviously that's part of the problem because they represent corporation. Is how the three branches of government, including the Supreme Court, you know, are bought by corporations. So, mm-hmm, we don't even have a democratic government. We have a corporate government.
Right.
And that is clear. That's why we continue to see a judicial industrial complex, a prison industrial complex, a healthcare industrial complex, and the list going on and on. You know, at some point there was 35% of unionized workers in the United States. What do we have
now? There
you go. What, maybe 11%?
11%, right at 11%.
You know, so...
And
so,
those unions are often, you know, very weakened.
Yeah, and so on. So, you know, so we see corporation taking over, you know, mm-hmm, the structure of government, all three branches of government, it chips away. Like Brother Jay here says, you know, our ancestor, I just saw Selma a few days ago, the movie Selma.
Still haven't seen it.
Yeah, a great movie, you know.
And you told me it's not like, I was afraid that that's going to be some kind of, you know, whitewashing kind of
Yeah,
job,
I've cried, you know, you know, we see how our ancestors, you know, struggle, you know, to get certain rights in our community, human rights, and how another system of oppression is put in place. Like Michelle Alexander says in the book, The New Jim Crow, one system of oppression is sustained by another. Slavery by segregation, segregation by mass incarceration. We get all this police brutality and everything in corporate America along the way. So, so we do want to vote, you know, but we also want a system that works. A system that's not corrupted, where our vote is going to be significant. And that's the problem we have today. I mean, we could have as many people out there and vote. We saw it with Obama. I worked first campaign. I worked in the first campaign. I went over to Homestead and knocked doors and all that. And we did it volunteering. I've heard that he was going to end one of his pitch, the disparity with in drug sentencing, where people with the same amount of crack, with same amount of crack cocaine and other, most of the people of white communities with the same amount of powder cocaine, the disparity sentencing 1 to 10. I've heard he said that, well, that's great, you know, because that's killing our population. A lot of our people are doing, you know, life because of the three strike and you out, you know, when they, you know, an extraordinary amount of incarceration because of the disparity of drug sentencing and so on. So when I heard him speak about that, you know, I said, listen, I've got to back up this brother. But we're still in the situation.
He's a great speaker.
Yeah,
you got to give him that. I mean, he does. He gives a great speech, no doubt. I mean, even I get... But the education just makes you depressed, I find, you know, because you see the depth of it. There's nobody really to elect, or the people who are honest and well-meaning are either eventually don't have the power to do anything. So I want to direct the attention to power, economic power. Right. And the history of the United States is that. I mean, you're talking about, you know, there's the race history, of course, but there's in the economic history... The union, I mean, the union level, that's what led, you gotta leave us? The man's gotta do he's had enough talking, he's gonna go do. And so, you know, we'll keep on, but thanks for coming. I hope to see you again, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. We're gonna continue building this collaboration. Do you wanna say something on that before you leave?
Okay. Yeah. Well,
say goodbye to the good people.
Yeah. We got a movement now where we're trying to get all of the organizations, the local organization here in Orlando together to, we had one meeting, to join forces, and everybody got their own issue, but all the issues come back to the same thing, mass incarceration. And so, what we're doing, we're sending out emails through Speak Up Orlando and other organizations, this Florida Civil Rights organization, and the local unions and also Brown Brothers and NAN, National Action Network. So we all trying to work together to come up with enough educational schooling to let the public know what to be aware of, what's going on in the communities, what we out there for, what we stand for. And I'm trying to get all the organizations to come together. And any other organization out there can hear my voice, they want to join us. You can get with McGarry here, and he's going to pretty much put it on his website. And we have it on NAN website and my website, SEIU, where you guys can join us, and we can all become one fist and challenge this, you know, new Jim Crow syndrome, I call it, blindness of America, you know. So I want to say goodbye to those who hear my voice out there. It's not the last time. It's my first time, but not the last. Never leave.
Oh, yeah, please.
And, guys, I hope y'all continue the conversation, and hopefully you invite me back to your show, and we'll do this again.
Anytime. Lovely.
All right, guys. Y'all take
Absolutely.
Care.
How you doing,
All right.
Pleasure. Thanks for being here. So, yeah, I mean, there's... Oh, yeah, go.
Yes, I'm going to add to the corporate control that we are facing. I don't know if you guys have been... the Life Brigade worked on what's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a free trade deal. Actually, they're not calling them free trade deals anymore. Mm. They're calling trade packs because we got onto their shenanigans with the trade deals. But basically what these trade deals, Trans-Pacific Partnership, Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, any trade pact that's coming up is very dangerous to democracy. Mm-hmm. Basically what these trade pacts do is basically sign over all government rules, regulations over to the corporations. Let's say we decide to make minimum wage here in Central Florida $15 an hour. What the corporations will be able to do if these trade pacts go through is that they will be able to come back and sue Orange County or the city of Orlando, whoever the government entity that brings about the rule. The corporations can claim that they are losing future profits because of this law. But here's where things get even better. These tribunals are run by the corporations, the lawyers are paid by the corporations, and the judge is paid by the corporations. Mm-hmm. So basically you're going into a court of law run by the corporations, and you basically have zero voice in this corporate law room. So this is what we're facing when Obama or the GOP start talking about trade deals. This is what we are facing. We are facing total corporate control if these trade pacts go through.
And it's a racket. I want to make it quite clear. This is not free trade. This is not capitalism. Mm-hmm. This is a racket.
It's a racket.
I think we, at top of the hour, we have to do our thing.
Okay.
And we'll be back in a few minutes.
All right. Thanks for letting me get
the preceding program did not reflect the views or opinions of the station, its management, or employees.
WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. I am John Lydon here of Public Image Limited. You may also know me as Rotten, and I may know you as W.